welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 367, which Sean was staggered to hear we're on. I don't know why, it's creeping up every week by week, of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal, Sean Orford. You all right, Sean?
I'm stoic, amazing, really good.
How is the how's the pandemic treating you so far, 12 weeks in, 18 weeks in?
It's funny, you know, I was doing 50% online anyway, and I've gone to doing 100% online. And I've been feeling a bit kind of tired in it. And I've been speaking to other therapists, and they are saying to me, isn't it exhausting working online all the time? And, I'm thinking, that's interesting. I wonder whether there is some kind of interplay, I don't know, the rays coming off screens or whatever it is. Different levels of attention and consciousness you've got to have to work in a different way. But I was thinking I must be getting outward and tired, but I've come to the conclusion it's actually this change of work style. The other thing is you don't get up and move around like you did. So
yeah, but you're still getting up. You did your 5K run this morning, I believe.
Yeah, I did a 5K this morning. Doing that three times a week, getting back into that, which is good. And of course, it's bubble time. So we had Nanny Pam came round for Sunday dinner on because she's allowed to be in our bubble now.
That's cool. So she chose you guys for her for her bubble.
We're honoured. But she it's funny. She comes in and she's looking around the kitchen and saying, "I haven't been in here for 3 months." Yeah, which is phenomenal when you think about it. It's crazy.
It's strange, isn't it, man? Yeah, a bit of lost. Yeah. Well, not lost time. We'll maybe do an episode about that because I don't feel like it's been, or it's, this is lost time at all. I've been working hard trying to change the world. So when we come back out, we're in a better place and all that. But
do you think? I mean, the work that you're doing with Rethink, do you think that people's attitudes to things like transport will be different?
Well, it will be. Yeah, I mean, I don't think people will change just because of it. Like, you know, obviously I'm obsessed with getting people on bicycles, and a lot of people have taken to bicycles in recent weeks. I think the world is itching to restart, isn't it? And I think it's going to take more than this, even flipping heck, to get people out of their cars. And we'll talk a bit about that today. We're talking about self-belief, aren't we, and confidence. People do get a lot of their self-belief and confidence from the clothes they wear, the car they drive, the house they own, all that kind of stuff. So there are big forces at play here, which I'm, you know, really fascinated by. We'll come on to that in a sec. New listeners, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. And for those that have been to our website in recent years, if you go to it, you will see that it has changed. And Sean, you might not even know this. And if Ree's listening, shock, horror, check it out. But don't judge me too harshly. I had to do it in literally about an hour because some listeners may know that our iTunes feed has been bust for the last few weeks. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out why. I got a developer involved to help me out. And Gary, thank you for your help. He dig deeper and deeper. And then finally I got this kind of warning email from the system saying that the theme that runs the website, the kind of template, was causing an issue, and it was that was breaking it. So I had to basically install a whole new theme template.
Oh, wow.
And that fixed it almost straight away.
Well done, you.
I've done less than an hour's work on it, and it's super basic and simple, but the feed works for iTunes. You can get all the archived shows on there. And it
works. That's good. So what have you been up to this week?
I've been working hard, Beth and my wife is starting to ease back into school a bit, so she's been in for a couple of days, so I've been juggling kids and work, and which is good fun. I think that's going to really hit my schedule in the next few months. Post summer holidays, I'm going to have to figure out how I can get everything done and, you know, get the boys educated to some kind of level and to school, you know, back in September, hopefully. Yeah, and a quick shout out to my pizza oven that I'm getting the hang of.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, really loving the pizza oven.
I got the day, guy making pizzas in a frying pan. So doing the bottom in the frying pan and sticking them under the grill to do the top.
And
it was very clever.
Is that just with your regular pizza dough, or is that the cheats pizza that I've seen?
No. It was like a cheats dough. He'd done it. It all took him about, I don't know, 20 minutes to actually mix the dough, get it salted. He did leave it to rise for a bit, and then he came back and made the pizzas. Whereas the pizza doughs that I'm doing, and we did when we went to the online course, you put them in the fridge for a day, they need to mature.
We did that the weekend, yeah. The last ones we did, we only left for like 6 to 8 hours. We did them in the morning and had them at the night. Mm-hmm. But that extra time does make a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. Maturing, yeah.
But yeah, let's not talk about pizzas. Well, maybe pizzas will come into this, because maybe pizzas are a huge part of where we get our self-belief from, Sean. But we've had an email from a listener saying that they're struggling a bit with self-belief, so I thought we'd do an episode on it. How come some people have more self-belief than others? Sean, what's your secret?
Well, I want to draw the distinctions first. It's like the word belief to me implies faith, which is like a religious statement almost, where we have to believe in something that we don't know or we can't prove. Whereas to have self-belief, I'd rather use the word self-confidence, because in the confidence I've confirmed that I can do something. So that I have that kind of sense of self. And one of the things about confidence in that sense is that if you're given a task, you may not know how to do it. But if you've got the confidence, then you can go and find out how to do it and get it done. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you don't have the confidence, then you can't. So whether we're going to use the word belief or confidence, but I just want to just make that distinction between when we believe something, it may be that we have no factual evidence that it's true. When we're confident about something, you know, we know it because we've done it, or we know we can do it, or we know we could do it. So it's a bit like if someone asked you to do something, is your first reaction, or like, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think, what was your bumpy road to self-belief, or do you have a good amount of confidence and self-belief, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I am one of those people who does believe I can do anything that I want to do, that I can put my mind to. And that really does come about from my dear old dad, God bless him, hadn't been on the show for a while, who told me continually that I was an idiot when I was a kid. And I believed him to start off with. And then it was after I left home when I was a teenager that I started to realise that I was actually okay. I did know lots of things I didn't know that I knew. And I started to get more confident about who I was. And then when I went through the monastic training bit and all that kind of stuff, the confidence really then came on. And that's an interesting distinction, because us Brits aren't good at tooting our own horn. It's like we're not allowed to kind of feel good about ourselves, because we see that as arrogance. And it's not. It's not. Arrogance is, to me, is when you believe something that isn't true and you're kind of strutting your stuff and, you know, a bit like Trumpy, really.
Yeah,
it has a lot of arrogance, but not a lot of insight.
Well, it's insightful though when you meet a person like that, isn't it? And you can kind of, you get this instant like instinct for, hang on a minute, this guy's acting really, I say guy or girl, and this guy this person is acting like they know it all, but you can tell that it's a facade. So what's with those people? How do we help them out?
Well, lots of those people that have the facade are the people that grew up in situations where very often they were put down, they weren't valued. There's something about when a child's going, you know, money, 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 listen to me, and you can see them walk around the supermarket and the mother's ignoring them. It's like, what have you got to do to get attention? And if you learn that when you're young, then you do things to get attention when you're older. So, I mean, we were talking, or you said earlier on, about the big house, the big car, you know, the big, the clothes, You know, does it really matter if your handbag was made by Gucci? If it does what you want it to do, does it matter? Mm-hmm. You know, well, for some people it does, because it gives them self-belief.
There's a quote in transport circles that gets used quite a lot. It's by a mayor of a South American city, Gustavo Petro. A developed country is not a place where the poor have cars. It's where the rich use public transport. I think about that a lot, you know, in my transport obsession. But we do have these systems, these hierarchies of status, don't we? And we get confidence and self-belief from the objects we own. Now, I'm obsessed with cars and car culture and how we kind of keep send that crashing and tumbling down, because I can't cope with it anymore. Try my best to explain why in my life, but. Is that something that can be done? Or, I mean, do you know people, wealthy people, that take the bus or take the train?
I have known. I was saying earlier on, I did some work for a multi-millionaire, very rich guy down in the West Country. And he had a barn full of cars. He had a handmade Bristol. He had Rolls Royces, Bentleys, Porsches, everything, Maserati, all that kind of stuff. And he used to drive around this bust up old Austin car, an old black thing, Austin, England. And he loved it. Yeah? But there were times when he had to go out and strut his stuff and look the part, right?
What was his reason for driving the Austin all the time? Was it just to keep a low profile, or just because he liked it?
He liked it. He just liked the car. You know, it's one that he had when he was younger, and you know, before he made all his money. And it was just great. And he was somebody who did have that sense of confidence. Yeah, I've worked with a lot of performers, comedians particularly, some musicians, but mainly comedians who have this issue of they have the confidence only because it's coming from the outside in. They have to stand in front of a stage of people to say, you're okay, you're all right, for them to have that self-belief. And if you take them off the stage, they diminish in size. And they're quite depressed and, and it's like, how many people need other people to tell them that they're okay, rather than having that inner sense of actually I'm all right.
Yeah. So how do you think the circumstances at the moment with people furloughed at home or not working at all or is affecting self-confidence and self-belief? You know, if people are missing out on that daily ritual of going to the office or going to work or teaching, like my wife is that's her calling. Are people missing out on that aspect of the lives work that they draw a lot of confidence from?
Yeah, and people in that sense that we tend to define ourselves by what we do. You know, who are you? I am A, and then we describe the roles that we play. If we are not playing any roles, then we're not anybody, are we? We're nothing. If that's the way we define ourselves. So that to not have worked for 3 months, some people do go into crisis. But the same thing happens if people are made redundant, when people retire. My classic is the amount of teachers who retire and then tumble into depression. And it's because for the teacher, they close the classroom door, they're on a stage, they've got 30 adoring people or 40 adoring people in their audience, who are continually telling them what a great person they are. And as soon as you take them away from that, where's the feedback that tells me I'm okay? Yeah? Unless you've got a lot of self-belief, then, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so those people that come to you for a bit of help in retirement, teachers or otherwise, or, yeah, surgeons might be another classic one we mentioned before we
came. And they literally are in the theatre, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know it's funny how it's called a theatre. I wonder why. I know that they used to be built so that people could watch and observe. I assume that's why they're called theatre. What do you do? What's the process for getting these guys and girls to set a course for a new life?
Very often it's looking at this concept of who am I? And I mean, anybody that's listening to this, if you get a piece of paper and write down, okay, who am I? What are you writing down? You know, I'm male, I'm female, I'm this, I'm that, you know, what am I? And when you get down to the core essence of who you are, and that's different for different people, you can see that you need some things to feed you. If someone is a very social person, lockdown has been absolutely awful because they can't interact. I mean, they might have kind of parties on Zoom to, you know, everyone's got the glass or whatever, but it's not quite the same. And although I don't agree with the 4,000 people that went on a rave at the weekend, you know, I understand it. You know, those 4,000 people were probably desperate to have contact with other people.
Yep.
And whether or not the infections go up from that, I don't know. But you can see that sense of me building some kind of self-esteem starts with looking at that sense of who am I? And then very often it's looking at where did it come from? You know, why is it there? And very often that does mean going back to a bit of childhood and looking at how I developed, you know. And then those decisions about, okay, that's who I am. That's what my identity's been and I've lost it. What identity would I like to develop now? So rather than developing it on default, maybe we can develop a new sense of self by actively planning and doing something. And that gets a bit exciting then. It's quite good.
So what was, looking at your dear old dad again then, so he was putting you down all the time. What was that saying about, or what was your insights into the kind of man that he was and his self-belief or lack of? Where was he?
In the end, as I learned things, especially when I did my training, I began to realise that he was the way he was because of the way that he'd been brought up. So what happened was that kind of negative self-esteem stuff was being passed down the generations, one father to the next. I hope, if I've got it right, that I've stopped it this generation, and that my lot will go on to be different, I hope. But you never know, do you? It's the kind of thing where you suddenly hear yourself saying things that your parents said to you when you were a kid. And you think, where did that come from? Oh.
Yeah, I'm doing that about 15 times a day at the moment. I've been crazy. There's an Einstein quote, or I think it's attributed to Einstein, that the only thing I know is that I know nothing. And I like that one. Simple, short and sweet, but if someone like Einstein was kind of self-aware enough to know that he didn't know anything, you know, or he only knew a fraction of the lessons that the universe had to teach, people that aren't open to learning new things, that I can't be having that, man. That's just
But the wisdom in that concept that he was saying was, I know nothing, but I know that I know nothing. Right? The problem I have with people who know nothing and they think they know everything, you know, and that's when you get into arrogance.
Yeah,
where you get people that don't know what they're talking about. And to me, Trump is a classic. And yet they present their point of view with such arrogant authority that they become plausible. And people go, wow, what a guy.
It's weird. It's like Emperor's New Clothes stuff, isn't it? Because, everyone can see through him. And we don't even bother correcting Trump a lot anymore, or journalists don't. They just kind of listen to him. I think that in the knowledge that most people can see through what he's saying and just kind of let him crack on with it.
There was a scary thing on TV over the weekend where they were doing a documentary in the States and they were interviewing people recently about Trump and his chances of re-elections and the amount of people in the kind of redneck belt who think he's a god, they think he's amazing, think he's incredible. You know, and I guess that from that point of view of self-confidence or self-belief or self-esteem, if there's an amount of people that are telling you what a good chap you are, then unless you have a lot of self-awareness, you buy it, don't you? You think, great. I got it right.
I know. We have a government that does the odd U-turn now and then, and maybe we should be aiming for governments and politicians that, you know, we salute them when they do U-turns and when they take evidence in. And because, I mean, there's a sense that, you know, politicians are so reluctant to make a U-turn because they'll be seen to being weak But maybe that's our fault for being a bit too judgmental. We should applaud politicians and people in power for making U-turns, for taking in the evidence, weighing it up, and having the confidence and the self-belief to say, I was wrong. You know, I appreciate I've learned some new stuff in the last couple of weeks. We need to chart a new course. But we have a media, and maybe it's because we lap up that media that kind of crucifies politicians and people in power for having that self-awareness. So are we part of the problem for not giving folks enough of a break for changing their minds?
Yeah. I think that's right. But again, you've got people that seek power. Why are they seeking power? Now, if there's an issue about me getting some self-esteem, self-belief by other people telling me I'm great, do I need to be prime minister to do that? Is it okay to be a shopkeeper? Is it okay to be a regular MP? You know, how much status do I need to get people to tell me that I'm okay to feel okay? And that's the difference for me between people that are doing things in what I would see as service. They're serving the world, serving humanity, rather than trying to get humanity to serve them, which is what I suspect is happening for a lot of politicians. And if you look at someone like Gandhi, who would wear homespun clothes and lived in a very kind of meagre way, not in a kind of an impoverished way, but he just led a very ordinary life, you know. And one of the things, I didn't particularly go along with Corbyn as a leader, but I really liked the fact he lived in a regular, normal house in a normal street. You know, there was nothing kind of, hey, look at me, about his house. It was just like a house.
And he had an allotment, yeah, and he liked gardening. Yeah. I know. Mm.
And did he ride a bike?
Of course, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
He did, yeah, or does. What people are definitely wrong, that we know are wrong about things, or, you know, let's go for the flat earthers, the people that proclaim that the earth is flat. And I'm willing to admit that there's a small chance, given that I've never been to outer space and seen the sphere of the earth in front of me, that maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's a tiny slither of a chance that the earth is flat. But, you know, we know it's not. But how do we deal with those people, and how do we not? I'm not interested in changing their minds, but where do they get their self-belief from?
Well, I think that you're switching from confidence into arrogance when you're talking about those kinds of people. And the thing is that if I am fixed so that I know the way that the world is, that's the way you should be, that's the way that it works, that's it, yeah, then I'm safe, because nothing changes, does it? And that's what people are looking for. And very often that whole loud voice about I am right and you are wrong is something that is, it's the arrogant bit is actually fear. The reason people are being arrogant is because they're actually scared. And so my classic would be, you go to the party, there's someone in the corner sitting there chatting away quietly, and someone else comes in and they need everyone's attention. I'm here. Yeah. Who has the most self-esteem, the most self-belief, and the most self-confidence? It's the person that's sitting quietly in the corner talking, because they don't need other people to validate who they are. Whereas arrogant people feel so small and so little that they need other people to feed it all the time. Yeah, as they get scared. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that those kinds of people in lockdown are the ones that do get really hurt, as are the people that are socialized, that needs the society, they need the group, the team, to give them that sense of self. Mm. You know? I mean, you've been locked down with the kids. So, obviously you've been in contact on Zoom and stuff like that, me and other people. Yeah. How's it been for you? Have you managed to maintain your own self-esteem in it all?
I think so. Yeah, maybe. You know, I've got two adoring little boys, so I'm kind of the teacher role for those guys. So I get my self-esteem and self-belief from, you know, their doting, and, you know, they come to me for all questions. You know, they couldn't survive without me. So maybe if they were a little bit older, and locked away in their bedrooms, or, you know, not wanting to talk to me anymore. So I'm sure that'll come in the next few years. Maybe that's when I'll start to struggle a bit more. I'll need a bit more help. But at the moment, it's dead easy because, you know, well, they can turn the telly on themselves and they can go and grab a bag of crisps when they're hungry.
Is this good parenting now? Telly, crisps.
Yeah, I know. No, it's all gone out the window. But yeah, you know, I'd love to count. I should count one day. I should get a little app or something, or a little check mark for every time I hear that word. Dad said, just in that exact tone, like a question or a request. Because as parents, you know, we're called on all the time, and I guess there's probably a certain drug that I get every time I hear that. Dad, it's like, someone needs me, you know.
Yeah, but then it's that issue of I'm getting my sense of worth. Because these people need me, they need what I've got, whether it's my knowledge, my emotion, you know, the practical stuff, whatever it is that's going on. So I'm getting that massive sense of feedback all the time. Positive parenting can really be an amazingly positive thing for both the parent and the child.
Yeah, and we have discussed in the show many times before about how, in the same way that your life can change when you retire, it can change a lot when the kids fly the nest when they move out, and the house goes quiet all of a sudden. That's a big moment in life, isn't it, for a family? I think
one of the things I was thinking about as we were talking then is the amount of people that I get to come to see me who are in their 70s, who retired in their 50s, and they have this great sense of self-esteem and self-belief that got them to the point where they could get the money together to retire at 55, without realizing how much of what they were doing, that sense of who am I, was lost to time. And by the time they get to their 70s, they've had 20 years, maybe 15 years, of doing whatever they wanted, and they are bored rigid. They're bored, they've lost their sense of self-esteem, you know, what's the point in being alive, all that kind of stuff, because they haven't had any positive feedback from what they're doing. And if you think of it, most of us will get some kind of positive, you know, return. You know, you work in a shop, there's people come to the counter, and you have that interaction can be like a really positive way of building the sense of who you are. You know, people come in the shop regularly. Hiya. You know, you belong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. 15, 20 years is a big chunk of time, isn't it, in our lives? So it's not to be... It deserves a good amount of thought. You know, so if people are getting to that mid-50s age and they can, you know, see the end is in sight for their work life, you still got a quarter of your life still to go. So it's worth having a think about.
there is a lot of research and discussions around why do people retire? You know, what's that about? And not saying that people shouldn't change, adapt, do different things or whatever. But lots of people from going and doing between 30 and maybe 50 hours a week to doing nothing is a real crisis point.
Yeah. I know. There's quite a lot of discussion going on now about universal basic income as a something that should be introduced in the coming months and years, quite urgently, to address the kind of oncoming mass loss of employment that's going to likely hit when the furlough scheme ends and businesses struggle to adapt to the new world that, you know, only X amount of people are allowed in a shop at once, or that kind of thing. So UBI, as it's known, is quite an interesting concept, really. And economically, I'm not sure how easy it is for a nation to afford, but like philosophically as well, if we all had X amount of money to kind of see us through the basics in life, I wonder what effect that would have on a society. The things that we do every day and what we do when we get up. A really fascinating area, actually.
Because the whole issue about why do you go to work, and obviously there's a money component in it, but there are other reasons people go to work. and they are self-esteem, self-belief, but also contact, socialization, or even respite, getting away from the house and the family kind of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, and I think that whole idea of we come out of this lockdown and what do we have left, what are we going to, is really going to be a fascinating thing to observe, but for many people a very difficult thing to live.
Indeed. You know, oh yeah,
a psychologist's dream, someone doing their PhD, you know, get on with it.
So, oh no, for sure. Yeah. What's your resource of the week, Sean?
Well, I've put down two. They're both by the same guy. And he is a guy who is like a Zen psychologist. So like that kind of Zen Buddhist approach to psychologist. And one is Dr. Stephen Simpson. And there's a therapy recording. You can get it on iTunes, which is the Zen Hypnosis Confidence recording, which is really, really good. It's a nice recording. But he also does an audio book that I put the link up for as well, which is about Zen hypnosis and confidence.
Yeah. All right, cool. There's a couple of blog posts I'll link to in the show notes, but one of them is quite a long form article really on self-confidence, self-belief, which is worth diving into. It's quite a very in-depth bit of writing, so I'll link to that this week.
Yeah.
But I've got to ask, for those that are watching our YouTube feed, for those that don't know, by the way, we upload these recordings to YouTube now every week, and they go out in our weekly email, which you can get on the website. Actually, can you? I need to put that box back in. Reminder to Ed, put the box on the website so people can sign up. What's on your light switch in the corner of my screen? There's two little circles on your light switch behind you.
They're magnetic. You know, if you've got a magnetic board.
Oh, yeah.
It's a magnet on the other side, yeah. So you put a piece of paper on there. So if there's something there that I need to remember, I might just put it up there with a piece of paper. So when I go out the door, the light switch is there, so I don't forget.
Fantastic. Love it. All right, now we finally answered that one. All right, back next week for more. Are you happy, Sean?
Yeah, I am good. I am good. You have a lovely week, and I will see you next week. One day, you and I will be able to meet properly in the flesh, and we can have a meal together or something like that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was thinking we could meet up in an outdoor space, couldn't we, in the coming weeks, and slap the microphone down as it will be 2 meters apart, or it might be a meter soon, but we could probably do a face-to-face again in a bit, couldn't we?
Yeah. You could even bring your portable pizza up with you, and we could cook a pizza while
Oh, yeah, now you're talking. Cool. All right, Sean, you have a good week.
And you take care.
See you, Rob.
See you now. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.